This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. The nurse who treated patients in West Africa and was held in quarantine over the weekend in New Jersey is set to return home to Maine. That's as controversy continues to swirl around quarantine policies announced by the governors of New Jersey and New York. My next guest believes history shows us that we need to calm down and get ourselves some perspective on Ebola. Dr. Howard Markell is with the University of Michigan School of Medicine, and he directs the Center for the History of Medicine. Very good to have you back on Stateside, Dr. Markell.
Lovely to be back. Thank you.
The photograph that I saw, an image of a traveler at an airport somewhere in the U.S., sitting in the passenger waiting area, reading a book, wearing a homemade hazmat suit, kind of struck me as the best example of overreacting to Ebola. How should we in the U.S. strike that balance between awareness and needless terror?
Well, certainly be aware and certainly have an informed concern. The first case was a man, Thomas Duncan, from Western Africa. But what nobody seems to be saying is that the system actually worked, because there was that one case and then it was shut down in terms of spread to other people that he had had contact with. And while it did spread to two healthcare workers, and we need to do a lot more in how we learn about caring for patients with Ebola, the modern public health system worked. This is a problem. But I got to tell you, as someone spends way too much time reading about old epidemics, this is not the most serious epidemic crisis in the United States yet. It doesn't mean it couldn't be, mm-hmm. and it doesn't mean we don't have to be very careful and manage it. But we need to take a breath and relax a bit.
Let's talk about history, because you're a historian as well as a physician. We know we can learn from history. And thinking of—
Well, some of us never do,
Well, that's true. And then we're condemned to repeat it, right?
Right, right.
The idea of thinking of epidemics and pandemics of the past, whether the plague or Black Death in medieval Europe or the flu pandemic of 1918 that came right hard on the heels of World War I or AIDS in the 80s and many others— there seems to be a kind of a typical pattern of the way these unfold. What can history teach us about Ebola?
Well, all epidemics have pretty much the same ingredients. They just have a different mixture of ingredients, such as a devil's food cake might have seven ingredients and a red velvet cake might have six ingredients. But
it's still a cake.
But still a cake. And you see scapegoating. You see the economic impacts of an epidemic or pandemic. They're very severe. You see panic. You see media attention, particularly when the epidemic disease in question kills relatively few in a relatively spectacular and disgusting fashion. So think anthrax, think SARS, think Ebola. You also see one of the most disturbing trends, and we haven't yet seen it with Ebola because Ebola is still going on. Yeah. But a few weeks or months after the epidemic or pandemic, there's something I call profound amnesia. So SARS, what's that?
When was that? Yes. Yeah.
Bird flu, what was that? And what is also very troubling is that in retrospect, when you look at these spectacular diseases and the response we put into it and the money and resources we put into it, but think about the infectious diseases that carry us off by the millions on an annual basis. Tuberculosis, at least 2 million people will die around the world. Maybe 20 to 30,000 of them will be in the United States. Influenza, it's time to get your flu shot. Some 35 to 40,000 Americans will die this year of flu. Malaria, you mentioned AIDS. These are the infectious diseases that kill us by the millions. And I'm not hearing much about that these days.
Is it because of that idea of fruit bats in the jungles of Africa, in that corner of Western Africa? Is that part of this, I don't want to call it mystique, but you know what I mean, part
it's
of
certainly
the
buzz. A great story.
There.
It's certainly the narrative of Ebola, I must confess, is one of the best narratives in terms of excitement, thrills, and panic. I feel like a Hollywood movie agent that we've seen in some time. And as well as the remarkably unforgiving nature of the virus, it kills anywhere from, depending on who cites the figure, 50 to 70% of those it attacks. It's called a hemorrhagic virus, which means it causes you to bleed internally and you get the shutdown of many organs, kidneys, lungs, liver, and so on. And so it's a spectacularly disgusting disease.
It reminds me, not to interrupt, but it reminds me of what I imagine the narrative of the Black Death was like in London in the 1300s.
Yeah, the Black Plague, you know, with these swellings and these fevers and, you know, coughing up blood. Cholera is my favorite. I'm a cholera man from way back when. And it's a diarrheal disease. You have such profuse diarrhea that a grown man, large man, can dehydrate and die in a matter of a day or less. And it's totally disgusting.
Yeah.
And in the 19th century, that was the classic pandemic disease. It happened four times, 1833, 1845, 1866, and then again in 1892. And the first three came to America and killed many thousands of people in a disgusting way and got a lot of press and a lot of attention and are a lot of features that would resonate to a reader today. And then 1892 happened, and it was terrible in places like Asia, Russia, and Europe, but there were only 9 American cases, and I would credit the modern public health system as it was starting in that era as a very good reason why.
I'm talking about the Ebola specter and what history can tell us and teach us about Ebola and our response to it, as I talk with Dr. Howard Markell with the University of Michigan School of Medicine and the Center for the History of Medicine. As the world figures out just how it needs to respond to this crisis, there are those who are pointing to years of aid given to these affected West African countries, saying that the outbreak demonstrates how ineffective the aid has been. In fact, I noted a committee in Britain's parliament reports out of £37 million in health aid given to Liberia, only £2.4 million actually made its way into the health ministry. Do you think this is scapegoating and playing politics, or do we need to rethink the way we give aid to African countries?
Well, I think the latter, and particularly Liberia, which has been in a civil war situation for so many years until relatively recently, and the disruption of government and, frankly, the corruption of government based on those figures. Yes, we have to make sure the money we give and the resources we give go to the right places. And I think it's time to rethink that very carefully. But that doesn't mean we stop. And we don't stop for a reason. We talk about cases in the United States. Well, they're tragedies, but that's a mere pittance to the 4,500 you mentioned in West Africa. And all the—
And that's just deaths.
Deaths.
Yes. Yeah.
And think about the predictions that have been made I've read 1 million to 1.5 million by 6 to 12 months from now. That's a lot of people. And that's, as you said, just deaths, not just necessarily cases. And if we allow Ebola to spread further in West Africa, not only is it a terrible humanitarian tragedy, but it'll create a shift of Ebola from an epidemic disease to an endemic disease. That means it's always there and it keeps cropping up. And as germs travel and as people travel, there's going to be more Ebola cases in Europe, in the United States, wherever people travel. So I think it's not just a humanitarian issue. It's good, sound public health sense, and you could argue good business sense, to stamp it out now as quickly as we can.
In Africa.
In West Africa, absolutely.
So the calls to ban travelers from these West African countries coming into the United States, as much as we hear more voices calling for that, we hear other voices saying doing that will make things worse.
Right. And I've been thinking a lot about this issue, and there's very little data to show that works. The other thing about travel bans compared to what is being done with very careful medical examinations on both sides of the airplane trip, as well as the request for airlines to divert traffic from places that Ebola is raging. Your point is very good. There's a diplomatic state issue that has not come up, I think, in the press. So most African flights go through Europe. I think all of them do. So if indeed a flight from Liberia to Paris to New York City carried an Ebola patient, and we then would have a travel ban not just against Liberia, but what about France? And if you did that to France, France would say, hey, you've had Ebola cases. We're banning you. And this commerce aspect of quarantines or travel bans or restrictions is something that's been with us as a major, major issue in epidemics, certainly since quarantine was first proposed in the Middle Ages and even probably before. So the commerce of it, or a country saying, you did this to us, we'll do this to you. And so I remember a few years ago, I actually brought up the question of travel bans. It was around bird flu, and I was meeting some State Department officials, and they just blanched. No, you don't want to. And so we need to really think these things through. We need to protect ourselves, but just knee-jerk reactions I don't think is what's called for here.
Let's talk about damage control. We've watched the Centers for Disease Control seemingly fumble the ball. Seems that way to the American public. Certainly Texas Health Presbyterian Dallas did its mea culpas and admitted that it mishandled Thomas Duncan patient zero. What kind of damage control needs to happen? And also what has happened or has not happened from the very top, from the White House, that you'd like to see?
Well, I think I really wouldn't call it fumbling the ball as much as gotcha moments. You know, we live in a 24/7 news cycle. Everything that is said or done is recorded. Could Dr. Frieden, the director of the CDC, have said things differently? Of course, but he's an honorable and hardworking public servant. If he said early on, people have complained, well, he was too confident by saying it would never come. And if instead he said it's going to come, I think he would be criticized for that. What I think is more important for us all to realize is how quick the CDC has ramped up its process against Ebola, how it has learned from every mistake or misstep it has made, how quickly it has corrected them, and then implemented new and better plans in place.
Do you think we expected too much from the CDC from the point of this has been going on for a while? Why did it seem that we were caught as a nation and as a health system flat-footed when it finally landed at our doorstep?
Well, that's a two-part question. I think the American tolerance for anything less than perfection from an imperfect federal government or state government is quite high. Mm. Intolerance is quite high.
Yeah.
Could they have done it? Well, as a Monday morning quarterback, that's an easy thing to say. But think about the sequestration process, the cutting of budgets across the board in the federal government, and how exquisitely rare Ebola has been in the United States, zero until a few weeks ago, zero cases. And you still have all those cases of TB or malaria or AIDS from other countries. You still have many chronic diseases in the United States, diabetes, heart disease, what have you. All these many, many medical problems that do need to be taken care of. So I wonder, you know, people have been talking as Monday morning quarterbacks. Let's say in the 2012 federal budget, there was $250 million earmarked for Ebola training and preparation. Don't you think somebody would have looked at that and maybe redlined it out? Mm-hmm. So it's really easy at this point, but we need to realize, let's look at this. Thomas Eric Duncan came from Liberia. And it's sad that he died. Two nurses got it and are actually doing much better. And then the public health mechanism, federal, state, local, shut it down. That's not an epidemic. That's modern public health working. So I think we've got to look on that side. You know, this is not a half empty, half full kind of a thing. And so I think I'd give them an A minus. And, you know, A minus is a pretty good grade given how difficult epidemics are and how many other graders there are out there.
Dr. Howard Markell is a physician and an historian from the University of Michigan. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.